This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Run with Chuang and Shaoning. Now, in about 15 minutes, we've got the KLCI opening and the legendary bell, of course, as well as international markets with Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence. But in the meantime, let's talk about government in private business. Because whenever there's a problem in Malaysia, whether it's unemployment or drunk driving or the seasonal haze, Malaysians often remark that the government should do something about this. But when should and shouldn't the government get involved? The reason we're asking this question today is because recently, the Minister of Entrepreneur Development and Cooperatives announced that his ministry will develop an online e-commerce platform. And the minister himself said in a press conference last week that he said once the service is launched, consumers will no longer need to shop at Lazada, Shopee or Alibaba. So we're looking into government intervention into private businesses space. Does it work? When might it be necessary, if at all? To discuss this, we're speaking to Lawrence Todd, Director of Research at the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known as IDEAS. Good morning, Lawrence. Now, first and foremost, is this government intervention in the market even necessary? What might be some of the pitfalls?
Well, I think that on the basis of what we know so far, it's not terribly clear. I mean, I think we have to make these judgments sort of in two ways, right? So the first is establishing what the rationale is. So is there a kind of clear, you know, market failure or other such problem that needs to be addressed? So I do think in this case, there is an interesting question now around e-commerce. So during the lockdown, when clearly people were less able to travel physically to the shops, e-commerce became something of an essential service. And I do think we need to study to see what happened during that period and to what extent, poorer communities, more rural maybe communities were underserved by e-commerce and how we could try to encourage the market to kind of meet those needs. So I do think that's a very legitimate question that needs to be asked. But then the second thing is then how do we do it? So if we want to, say, encourage or use the power of the government to support and meet those needs, there's a few different ways we can go about that. Of course, the government could set up its own entity, as they seem to be doing, but I do think that has a number of problems. And actually, I think a better approach might be to look at how we can use regulations. So, for example, with POS Malaysia, they are licensed to be a universal service licensee, which means they have to provide small letter delivery to everyone in Malaysia, and they get some subsidy for that. So, and we do the same thing with MAS to provide rural air services to kind of remote areas and in other areas too. So I think that would be a much better approach to tackling that problem, if indeed that is a major problem that first we need to assess. And that entering the market directly as a business is probably not the wisest way to go about it.
But Lawrence, in general, if I look at this government in business, so are you saying that it has to be examined on a case-to-case basis, I mean, as to whether there's an achievable public good? Is the point then having very clearly stated KPIs then for the government as to why they're doing it and what they hope to achieve?
Yeah, that's certainly essential, right? So I think in general, as you were saying in your introduction, that we see that the government has, over the last sort of 30, 40 years, intervened for a whole set of different reasons, to deliver the NEP and then to, save corporate Malaysia after the Asian financial crisis, and then ad hoc interventions such as this that have kind of come up from time to time. And now, in hindsight, a lot of these issues get blurred together. And so when you talk about restructuring GLCs or reducing the government's ownership, some people will give you one justification and other people will give you another. So I certainly think that a very clear rationale, strictly defined for the purpose of the government's presence is certainly needed, and more technical regulations underneath that, such as separating out commercial and non-commercial activities and so on. But look, I think I would make another broader point, which is that I also think there's a problem wherein Malaysia tends to turn to GLCs and taking a direct presence in the market rather than expanding the capacity of the state itself. So what we saw during COVID-19 was that, yes, the government had to make massive fiscal expenditure on social protection, but it also used the GLCs. You might remember that term, the government ecosystem, which referred to the GLCs as a way to provide that social protection. And I think that that's something we have to break. And the way to do it is we have to have a conversation about increasing taxes in Malaysia. Increasing taxes so that we can increase state capacity, so the state can step in legitimately to solve problems directly where it needs to. And then we gradually reduce this reliance on GLCs so that the market can grow and indeed provide that tax base for us. So I think that has to be the vision. And when the government always turns to setting up a new GLC to solve a problem, I think it's just delaying this issue of how do we actually build real state capacity. And that has to be through taxes, not through constantly setting up companies.
Well, the Alliance of Malaysia has worked itself into a bit of a knot here. And obviously, at this point in time, high taxes might be something that is out of the equation. Is there a low-hanging fruit solution to the government of the day to say, OK, let's unwind this position, but let's do it in an elegant fashion?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I mean, obviously, there's no good time to talk about raising taxes, and probably 2020 is a worse time than anyone could have imagined. But I think that I would put it another way, which is that I think COVID has, you know, demonstrated to us the sort of vital importance of state capacity and the need. We need to recognize that we need to invest in that state capacity, whether it's in the healthcare system or in social protection mechanisms, or in tools to enhance the economy and so on. So I think that we should set out a roadmap. You know, it can take 5 years to, on the one hand, increase the tax base, and on the other hand, gradually divest from the GLCs. And doing that in parallel hopefully would, you know, continue to incentivize businesses to be here. So, you know, okay, yes, you might pay more tax, but you won't face the issues with the GLCs that a lot of businesses complain about. So I think if we can, you know, put that vision, you know, if the government takes that leadership and decides on that vision, then we can set out a roadmap to get there over 5 to 10 years. But yes, there will be sacrifices and there will be, you know, opposition. But I think until we launch this problem, we're going to continue to have this reliance on GLCs, which slows down growth in the economy, as well as, you know, avoids this deeper question, which is actually taking the hard choice to invest in our state capacity.
Could one possible path forward, Lawrence, be the Scandinavian model where the government does charge high taxes, but in return the people get very good quality education, healthcare, security, transport, things like that? Because obviously Malaysia is already in a situation where taxes are already comparably higher than the regional peers like Hong Kong and Singapore.
Yeah, well, there's a few things to say on that. So I think that has to be the direction I feel, because when we look at the healthcare system, it's, to be honest, financed in this incredibly patchy way that we have a basic public healthcare service, but then it's under strain. All these ad hoc financing solutions are being tacked on, and increasingly now people are, you know, the government's turning to SOCSO and EPS to contribute to kind of lifestyle health issues. And then of course there's still private insurance, which Malaysia has sort of tried to encourage, but hasn't kind of gone full, you know, whole hog for like in the way that the United States has. So I think we have to decide what kind of public healthcare system we want, but then it does come with that decision to invest in it. And as you say, it has to be predicated on an understanding from the public that, yes, we pay taxes, but we get great public services, whether that's in health or education. I think when it comes to the regional competition question, I think Singapore and Hong Kong are outliers because of their size, and then, you know, the whole model of those economies is different. I think we do have to think about this point of competition, because we do need to attract that investment, attract that capital to stimulate growth in Malaysia. But at the same time, we have to be taking concrete steps towards building our capacity, because ultimately that's also in the interest of investors. Because if we have better infrastructure, but, you know, the better schools and hospitals leading to sort of more capable human capital, that is actually something that investors should welcome. And to be honest, I think we'd be more interested in those investors that want to see good infrastructure, good human capital, than those that want to see low taxes. So I think that we just have to set out a roadmap, not aggressively get there overnight, but set out a roadmap to the kind of country that we actually want to be in sort of 10, 15, 20 years, and then make concrete steps towards it.
Okay, Lawrence, if we take this conversation a little bit further, at what point, right, should then the government consider exiting a business? Because, we, like you say, they're involved in many aspects of Malaysian business. Mm-hmm. After all, there has been talk of, for example, of the government reducing their stakes in GLCs. Is that one way?
Yeah, so I think that the government has very diverse presence in the market. So, yes, on the one hand, there are the government still holds a lot of shares in publicly listed companies, where I think that on a case-by-case basis, we can look at, you know, what is the value of holding those shares. I mean, because there is some value. For example, during COVID, you know, Malaysia's stock market didn't completely crash. And part of the reason is because the government holds such a large base that it's going to add to that stability. But I think over time, you want to gradually reduce that. But then there's completely other cases, right? So, for example, we published a paper this week on Felder. I'm looking at the Felder model, which is where the government is trying to support smallholders in the agricultural sector. But that fundamentally, it's now a deeply problematic model because it's heavily exposed to the global palm oil market, which is very erratic. And actually now we're at a point where most of the Felder settlers are in their late 60s, the kids don't want to work on the plantations, and mostly they're employing foreign workers. So this intervention hasn't quite achieved what it was intended to. So it needs a kind of fundamental reevaluation, but you don't just want to kind of pull out overnight, because we need to also make sure that we're providing a sustainable welfare path for those settlers. So I think it's different. I think, you know, divesting shares in CIMB is quite different to pulling out a Felder, you know. So I think we just need to separate out, when we talk about GLCs, you know, the different types of entities, and then in each case go through and assess, okay, actually, what is the purpose of this? How can we evaluate that? And as we evaluate it, how can we then decide on a roadmap for transition? And transition can go in two directions. I mean, you might decide that, okay, in this case, the market's fully able to meet this need, and therefore we will gradually divest the government presence. But you might also decide, okay, actually, the government isn't. The market is failing here, but we just need to bring this agency fully back under public control. So Felder was listed in 2012 or something, and then proceeded to make a lot of losses. And actually maybe going back to the older model, purely based on the cooperative, would be the right way to go. So I think it's not about having an ideological bias or being blinkered about what the options are, but doing a case-by-case thorough evaluation. And then having a bigger picture in mind, which is one where we move towards a more market-based economy, but supported with a progressive tax system that can invest in the social protection and the public services that can actually provide people with a real safety net and not use GLCs as the safety net.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Lawrence Todd of Ideas, breaking down for us when government should be involved in business. And clearly, not a simple answer. But the point is, if government is in business, they need to have KPIs. They need to be accountable and transparent. And maybe consider an exit plan. After all, you do not want to crowd out private enterprise. But up next, the KLCI opening, as well as international markets with Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.